Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast, and in this episode I want to talk about the nature of the Nazi Party in 1933. The reason why I want to talk about that is that previously, about a week or so ago, I think it is now, I was looking at the office of the Führer, the position of Hitler as charismatic leader within the Nazi movement in 1933, and the implications that the creation of Führer had for the workings of German government. Now we're going to look at the party itself. Now it's important to distinguish between party and government. In totalitarian societies, Mao's China, Nazi Germany, Soviet Russia for example, party and state become intertwined and entangled and in all sorts of complicated ways. We're going to try to avoid talking about the bureaucracy because that's going to be the subject of a separate podcast and look specifically at the party today. Now, previously, we'd said that the personal dictatorship of Hitler and the role of the party were the two pillars upon which Nazism was politically founded. So the Nazi Germany was more than simply just a personal dictatorship. We are often given misleading pictures of Nazi Germany by documentaries and things on the History Channel and that sort of stuff, not because they're based on flawed information or their advisors are wrong, but simply the overwhelming power of visuals, because it's obviously a visual medium, normally centre around pictures of Hitler addressing the Nuremberg rallies or addressing other conferences and meetings. And so the impression that history students are sometimes given is that Nazism was Hitler and Hitler was Nazism, and there's nothing really else to say on the matter. Well, obviously, this is inaccurate and misleading. The problems that developed for the regime very often emerged because of tensions that were present because of poor integration of the party and the old civil service elites. And both had their different ways of governance and different outlooks and different mentalities. By their very nature, civil services are more conservative with a small c. They are less inclined to radicalism and extremism. The reality is that there were large sections of the German civil service, judiciary, police, foreign service, the German state, that rather looked favourably on the advent of Hitler coming to office. For a number of reasons. Some would have been racial thinkers and anti-Semites, but many others were German nationalists who believed that Hitler was going to restore German fortunes. There were those in the civil service that looked at the party as a means by which some of their more extreme views on racial science, eugenics, racial hygiene, and racially based system of law could be introduced. But there were also civil servants and bureaucrats who thought that This was simply a continuation of the world that they had known under the Kaiser, and that the Weimar Republic had been a rather unfortunate interval. Now, simply because there were civil servants and bureaucrats who looked favourably on the party and looked favourably on Hitler, doesn't necessarily mean that these people were imagining the possibility of the Holocaust. It's very difficult to suggest in 1933 that people could look forward in a decade ahead and see trains going towards death camps in Poland. We can't really make that case. But certainly there would have been quite a prevalence of racial thinking there. Now, the conservatism of the civil service allied with elements of reactionary racial thinking, when this came into contact with the kind of the chaotic dynamism of the party. I don't say dynamism in a good way, by the way. People often look upon it as being a very positive adjective. Dynamism here simply means ever-increasing levels of action and change. And this is, for a political movement, normally a source of chaos, of radicalisation of policies in the most extreme fashion, and of disorder. Had Nazism become less dynamic, it would have ceased to be Nazism. Nazism can be perhaps described more as a movement than a party in the period 1919 to 1933. Nazism springs up and develops in Germany, not simply just because of Hitler's actions, but there are almost autonomous emergences of Nazi groupings in northern Germany, parts of Germany such as, for example, Saxony, that emerge without Hitler's direct intervention. So the Nazi movement was one that was based upon a constant radicalism, a constant dynamism, and the idea that action, or will for want of a better term, was more important than planning, and more important particularly than the workings of intellect. Now, Hitler was a famous anti-intellectual. He really believed he was the only intellectual, and believed that constant, rapid, radical mass action with everybody moving in unison, directed by a charismatic leader, was more important than any well-thought-through set of policies. It's not to suggest that there was nobody in the Nazi movement that was organised. Joseph Goebbels is a very effective organiser in Berlin in the 1930s. But the Nazi movement, later the Nazi Party, viewed itself not as a partner to established political, established bureaucratic elites, but as an institution or a movement that was on its own kind of crusade. It was there, as all fascisms tend to view themselves, to save Germany, to save the German people from a number of crises. It was there to save them from democracy and the democratic political structures that had caused supposedly chaos and division within Germany since the creative foundation of the Weimar Republic, from the corruption of intellectual, social and moral values associated with the Weimar Republic. So these very cosmopolitan, non-German values such as Western liberal democracy, socialism, and the advance of cultural modernity as seen in Berlin in the 1920s, with things like the Bauhaus movement, modern art, modern theatre and cinema and architecture, and all these kinds of things, which in Hitler's eyes were not traditional, not German, and some sort of cruel Bolshevik Jewish trick. Which is utter nonsense, of course. It was this weakness, this corruption, which the Nazis believed had set in actually even before the Weimar Republic. They believed that these sorts of things had been seeping into Germany in the years before the First World War, and this accounted for the loss of the war. The fact that the Nazis, the Freikorps, the Stahlhelm, the Steel Helmets, and all these various movements across the extreme political right were full of men who had fought the war, who had seen comrades die, and who were at a loss to explain the outcome, meant that there were a large number of people in the Nazi movement who looked to find answers, and the most flawed and misguided ones, admittedly, but they looked to find answers to the question as to how Germany could possibly have lost the war. And political division that emerged in Germany from 1960 onwards, when the period of the Bergfrieden, or peace within the fortress, a social truce, if you will, broke down under the pressures of war. These are obviously blamed, but the racial and eugenic aspect of Nazism pointed to not just the Jews, but this kind of idea of there being social ballast, that people who were mentally disabled, physically disabled, or just not socially part of the German Reich, people who were on the peripheries, people who were alcoholic or prostitutes or the work shy or whatever, that this kind of social ballast, as it was referred to, or useless eaters, had to be dealt with. In fact, Nazism as a movement was a force that transplanted itself into German society for the purpose of reforging Germany ready for the next war. And the Nazi Party had an agenda of sweeping away social division, creating the idea of the people's community or the Volksgemeinschaft. So class, social status, religion, regionalism, and these sort of seemingly small differences would be swept away, and instead a racial community would be built, and this would be based on new ideas of race. It would be a community of blood. Now, if you've read Timothy Snyder's excellent book, Black Earth, you really should if you haven't. The first chapter talks, he actually refers to Hitler as a racial anarchist. It's an interesting argument as to how he comes to that conclusion, and not one that you should dismiss lightly. I'm not suggesting Hitler was an anarchist, but Hitler actually doesn't believe in really the sanctity of the state at all. The state was merely, in Hitler's eyes, a means for delivering racial ideas. And if the state was no use to this, or the state was an obstacle to this, as it is in Austria in 1938, then the state must be dissolved. And this is exactly what happens in Austria during the Anschluss. The state itself ceases to exist, and all previously existing rights that Jewish people in Austria might have had go with it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Only Aryan Germans, or Aryan Austrians, I beg your pardon, are eligible to become German citizens thereafter. And this little vignette tells us something important about the Nazi Party, in that it was based in racial thinking. I mean, this is something we all know, but it is based absolutely and utterly in racial thinking, and that all of the ideological considerations are very much secondary. The reason for the state existing is to deliver racial policies, to create a racial community, and to remove racial enemies and opponents. And because they placed this emphasis on race, and because race became the primary determinant in all politics, it thus, in the eyes of the Nazis, made all political considerations, all other political considerations, trivial and irrelevant. It is from this perspective that all of the political parties can be ruthlessly suppressed, because only racial thinking is, or racial thinking is the only legitimate type of politics as far as the Nazis are concerned. And they have their own, through Mein Kampf, their own sort of misunderstood version of biology, where racial struggle defines the world, and that all races should follow the laws of nature, as in Hitler's view, animals do. Hitler, by the way, understood nothing about nature whatsoever, and had a very shaky understanding of Darwin, who he admired. And human beings were, in his view, part of the kind of the great natural struggle, and the strong must therefore prevail. And any idea, particularly socialism, actually interfered with the workings of this racial thinking, Christianity as well. These ideas encouraged sympathy for the weak and alms for the poor, and therefore disrupted the kind of the delicate working, the delicate balance of nature. And when you did this, you resulted in countries that became progressively weakened. And so in Hitler's own particularly warped set of calculations, socialism had done so much to weaken Germany that Germany ultimately lost the war, because socialism had allowed the racial stock to atrophy. And this was, in Hitler's view, this was how the Jews had managed to cripple Germany secretly before the war. Law had no real legitimacy for the Nazis either. They were aware that it would take a while, perhaps quite a long time, to dissolve all aspects of the existing German legal system that didn't suit them. But they had an intolerant attitude towards legal systems, because they were contrary to the ideological vision of the Nazi Party, because they didn't incorporate initially racial thinking, though later on, not only does Hitler and the party help to create a parallel system of police and judiciary to enforce ideological and racial goals, but also all aspects of the civil service and the police and the existing system of, say, for example, prisons, are infiltrated by racial ideas, many of which are quite popularly received. In Noakes and Pridham's book, Nazism, A Documentary Reader, which, as I've said before, if you're a student of Nazism, you really need to get this book, it says, "Moreover, the leaders of the party cadres, the hardcore Nazis, were for the most part men who had been formed in the tough and often brutal world of the Freikorps and the party's time of struggle before 1933. Most were ruthless political entrepreneurs, determined to gain power and then to keep it, openly contemptuous of bureaucratic and legal clauses. Apart from their own personal interests and those of their cliques, they were loyal only to the Führer and to what they rightly saw as his main aims, the racist and imperialist goals at the core of the Nazi Party. Party contempt for the bureaucracy and its regulations was encouraged by Hitler himself, both in statements in Mein Kampf and in frequent comments to his entourage." So to pick that one apart, if we talk about Hitler first, Hitler had a contempt for bureaucracy, for pen pushers as he saw it. These were not men of action. These were not dynamic leaders like he was. In fact, as we know, Hitler didn't like paperwork and didn't want to have anything to do with it, didn't see it as his role. But he also believed that it was the bureaucracy that stood between him and the people, and that the essence of his role and his power was his ability to connect directly with the German people and to be the divine kind of interpreter of their will. There were a generation of street fighters and thugs who had been, many of them had been former members of the German army or members of the Freikorps, and had punched their way across Germany throughout the 1920s and 30s. These were men who were also in the SA, but many of them who were directly and exclusively in the Nazi Party. And these guys were particularly brutal and brutalised figures who had existed in this beer hall world of machismo and anger. And they believed that their simple, violent and direct methods were what Germany needed, that no more of the kind of the corrupting forces of democracy, intellectualism and the bourgeois world should be tolerated, as this is what had dragged Germany down. These are guys who had a simple and direct ways of dealing things in wartime and thought, well, this is essentially how the world works. We need to bring this back home. They were men who were enormously self-serving. We think of them as ideologues purely committed to their own racial ideological goals. This is as if those weren't unpleasant enough. But these were men who were immensely corrupt. They were looking at infiltrating the German state and using it for their own advantage, and perhaps the opportunities of looting it. Corruption was something that becomes dramatically on the increase when the Nazis come to power. We often have this rather cinematic view of the cold, clinical and ruthlessly efficient Nazi, but actually there was an immense amount of embezzlement and in many circles alcoholism and other kind of moral failings on the parts of Hitler's apparatchiks. Robert Ley is a particularly good example if you ever wanted a case study of that one. Hitler's constituency, his base, political target really, was described by him as the Volk, or the people. But the term doesn't really just mean people. It means the racially identified German nation. This isn't the state. It's not anyone within the borders of Germany. It is people who are racially German. And to him, people who shared the same blood had some kind of quasi-mystical connection with one another, and they were together an entity far greater than the sum of all the parts. Hitler says in Mein Kampf, "We must distinguish in the sharpest way between the state as a vessel and the race as its content. This vessel has meaning only if it can preserve and protect the content, otherwise it is useless." But it brings us back to that Snyder quote about him being a racial anarchist. Here is what Hans Frank, the later Gauleiter of the German government in Poland, had to say of Hitler. "Hitler had been a party man. As such, he'd come to power and remained one as a statesman. He always kept the position of supreme leader of the NSDAP, the Nazi Party, as well as his Reich positions. On the 30th of January 1933, the investiture of this function in his person was clarified and consolidated. It was also formally secured. His will was party law. He was the absolute autocrat of the NSDAP. The Reich, however, especially the state apparatus, bound by formal lines of jurisdiction and a hierarchy of command, was unfamiliar and strange to him. On the 30th of January 1933, his will alone was not yet law in this area. Therefore, he felt insecure and inhibited towards it. But since he believed that he had been victorious in pushing through his concept of the party, he saw the organisational form of the NSDAP as suiting him best. Instead of transferring to the party the traditional form of a legally ordered, expertly supervised, formally interdependent, juridically controlled state executive, his whole aim was to transfer the independent position he had in the NSDAP and his inner structure to the state. On the 30th of January 1933, he brought this aim with him. And that's a long, long way of saying that when Hitler came to power, the state was not going to tame and temper the Nazi Party and the workings of bureaucratic, juridically interdependent Germany was not going to put pressure on the chaotic and dynamic Nazi movement to tame it and adapt it, as normally happens when new political parties encounter the workings of the state. Instead, Hitler was there with his party to capture the state and to bring the values of Nazism into the workings of the state, and he proves to be highly effective in doing this. Anyway, I hope this has been useful. Thanks very much for listening and for supporting the podcast, and I'll catch you next time, and do see if you can give us a good write-up on iTunes. All the best. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.